The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. I get to talk to my friend, Pastor Greg Laurie. And if you're nice, you get to listen in. Maybe you even get to watch it. Maybe you're subscribed to my newsletter, ericmetaxas.com. You go there, sign up for the newsletter, and then we send these videos to you. And you can see, for example, what we're wearing. My goodness, that is a magnificent buff waistcoat you're wearing, Greg Laurie. How are you?
It's called a jean jacket. Thank you very much. Buff waistcoat.
A buff waistcoat? Well, wait a minute. What is that, the tricorn hat with the cockade and the... No, I'm sorry. That's wrong.
This is why you need to watch the video, because they would not know this if they had not seen it.
Technically, the term for the hat you're wearing, I realize, is a busby. That's the horse guard at Buckingham Palace. They wear busbies. Well, listen, Greg, you're a pastor in California. You're a friend of mine. So my instinct, of course, is to joke unto death. So I'm going to try to shut up and be a normal host. You have written a lot of books. So you're a pastor, but you write these amazing books. Tell us about the three books you've written and the new one about Billy Graham. What is this? What are they called? The series? What's it called?
Well, we call them basically icons of faith. And so basically I'm looking at the lives of interesting people. I didn't set out to write three books on notable people, but it started with Steve McQueen. And I'd always heard that McQueen had become a Christian later in his life, but I wasn't sure if that was true. So it started with a Google search, Steve McQueen, Christian. And I started finding a lot of information about his life. His pastor was mentioned. So I thought, well, I wonder if this guy, Leonard DeWitt, the pastor of Steve McQueen, is still alive. Well, as it turns out, Leonard was alive and well. In fact, I'd met him earlier and didn't even realize who he was. So starting with Leonard, I began to discover this incredible story of the legitimate, real conversion of McQueen, who was at that moment in time the number one movie star in the world. I mean, this would be like if I don't know who to compare it to, Brad Pitt or George Clooney or Leonardo DiCaprio or Tom Cruise came to Christ and we're talking about it. So I met Steve's widow. She helped me with this story, got a lot of the details right. And so it became a book, Steve McQueen, The Salvation of an American Icon. It also became a documentary film. Then I came to Johnny Cash, and people had asked me, if you ever wrote another, what would you write it on? I said, well, probably Johnny Cash. He's such a colorful character.
Wait a minute. He's not colorful. He's the man in black. He's the antithesis of colorful. Did you know?
He did wear colors. He wore colors occasionally.
But so, I just want to tell you, because since you and I joke so much, I have to tell you this because you weren't there. Twice I've interviewed Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, who always wears black. And both times I have put the question to him, are you the Jewish Johnny Cash? And the first time he said no. And the second time he said, oh, yeah, I am. But anyway, a lot of people don't know this. Johnny Cash always wore black. That's a whole story. Another very important book that you wrote. At what point did you decide, OK, it's going to be a trilogy and I'm going to write about Billy Graham? When did this occur to you?
Yeah, well, and by the way, the Johnny Cash book is being made into a documentary right now with the Irwin brothers. We're working with the Cash estate.
Can they
we
get
have
me
interviews
a part?
With Roseanne.
Can they get me a part in this? Because I'm trying to break into acting. I could play June Carter Cash as a teenager. You don't think I can do that? You don't think I have the acting chops?
No,
I'm going to make
well,
you eat
your
words.
You have Reese Witherspoon as a point of reference, so you could start there. I think you could be... I don't know the role. We'd have to think about that. But anyway, it's a documentary film, so there's not any roles.
I can play Carl Perkins as a teenager.
There you go, Carl Perkins. And what song is he best known for?
Carl Perkins? I don't remember.
Blue suede shoes.
I was going to say blue suede shoes. Is that it?
That's the one.
See?
So anyway, okay. So Johnny Cash. Okay, so Billy Graham. You know, Billy's sort of like the glue in the two stories because Steve had an interesting encounter with Billy. He didn't know Billy, but later in his life, after Steve had come to Christ, he found out he had cancer. He was not able to get any kind of treatment. There was nothing they could do for him in the hospitals here. So he actually went for some very unorthodox treatments down in Juarez, Mexico. And he requested that his pastor, Leonard DeWitt, would try to get a hold of Billy Graham because he'd like to meet Billy. Well, Billy very graciously took time out of his schedule, met Steve on the tarmac where his jet was to take him to Mexico. They had prayer together. And then Steve misplaced his Bible, and Billy gave to Steve his personal Bible, which Steve took with him. The surgery was successful, but unfortunately he died in recovery, and they came into the recovery room, and Steve was holding that Bible that Billy gave him. And the last words that Steve said to Billy were, "I'll see you in heaven." And of course, Billy was a good friend of Johnny Cash. They would vacation together. They'd fish together. Their wives were friends. And Johnny played at a lot of Billy's crusades. So I thought, he's the glue in the story. And to me, he's kind of the coolest of all of them, if I can use that word. Steve was the king of cool, as he was called. Johnny was called the godfather of cool. But Billy, in my estimation, was the coolest of them all because of the impact he had on men like that, but people around the world, some well-known, some unknown.
We have to think of what you said. You said Steve was the what of cool, the king of cool,
the king of cool,
and Johnny Cash was what,
the godfather of cool.
So what would Billy be? The preacher of cool? How would you say
he
that?
He would be maybe the coolest of the cool, and because to me, cool is just defined as authenticity. It's unique. You know, you're a trailblazer, you're a groundbreaker, you're someone that thinks outside of the normal lines that people think in, and you are willing to take risks, and you're your own person. You don't follow culture, you try to influence culture. So I think Billy was all of those things and more because he was so innovative. You know, when we think of Billy, we think of the older, elder statesman, lion in winter version of Graham that could be carved into Mount Rushmore. But I spent a lot of time exploring the young, brash, fun-loving, innovative Billy, who did so many things before anybody else did them. He was the king of all media long before Howard Stern claimed the title. Of course, you're the king of all media now, Eric. But
thank you.
But before Eric, there was Billy.
Hard to believe that anybody could go before me, really. It's an amazing thing. But listen, you know, we haven't said it. I don't know if you've mentioned it. You were friends with Billy Graham. You knew him for quite some time. When did you first meet Billy Graham? And do you write about this in the book? I mean, is it kind of a personal book?
Yeah, it is. There's, you know, I tell a story. We did a lot of research. And tell you a lot more about the younger Billy Graham. I didn't feel I needed to write the definitive biography on Graham because so many have been written. So it's my personal story. It's called Billy Graham, the Man I Knew. So I weave my personal stories into it, how he influenced me, things he said to me in private, and then things that I observed. You know, it's a book about an evangelist written by an evangelist. So I think it's unique in that regard. I met Billy for the first time briefly in the mid-70s. Then I got to know him in the late 80s, and then our friendship developed in the 90s when he asked me to be on the board of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, which I've been on that board for over 25 years. But he asked me to help him with research for his sermons because at that point I was younger. I was in my very early 40s, and he wanted to reach a younger generation so I would work on his messages, freshen up the illustrations, help them with cultural connections.
In other words, instead of referring in the message to Carl Perkins, he might refer, for example, to the Smashing Pumpkins?
Yes, or the Notorious B.I.G. or
oh, stop it.
That were
stop it. He was not preaching. He didn't mention the Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah, I actually gave him an illustration about the Notorious B.I.G.
How would he pronounce
that? And I actually,
that?
In the notes, said, "You have to say B-I-G, don't say big."
So he would say, "I understand there's a rapper Well, how would he say? I understand there's a rapper named Notorious B.I.G. How would he say that?
I heard there's a rapper out there, and they call him Notorious B.I.G. And he would always say, and...
I can't believe... Yeah. I always joke with you. It just devolves into joking madness. Folks, when we come back, we're going to try to get serious, and I promise you, we will fail. Don't go away.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Folks, I'm talking to Greg Laurie, the pastor, the evangelist Greg Laurie, and now the author and upholsterer Greg Laurie. Greg, welcome.
Eric,
I'm sorry, you're not an upholsterer. But I've seen the upholstery in your home, and it's wonderful. Greg, you were talking about Billy Graham. Your new book is called Billy Graham, The Man I Knew, and you said that you were hired in the '90s. To kind of freshen up some of his sermon illustrations to be that hip guy. And are you serious that in a sermon he mentioned Notorious B.I.G.? I don't believe that.
Yeah, he did. I wasn't hired. I did it voluntarily. Yes, I gave him quotes from Smashing Pumpkins. There was a song they had out called Rat in a Cage. And so I had to write it out. I had to explain. I said, there's a band out called Smashing Pumpkins. And I put a note, Billy, this is a band, blah, 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 blah. Or Notorious B.I.G., you pronounce it this way. You know, because he wouldn't know about these things. He didn't sit around and listen to this. But I was bringing him cultural. Billy always was very in tune with the culture of his day. If you listen to Billy's sermons, he would always talk about something he just read, something he saw on TV, someone he just talked to. But, you know, as he got older, he needed just a little help in connecting to modern culture.
It's a little depressing to think of him. I mean, I hope that he never referred, for example, to Flock of Seagulls or Men Without Hats or Pet Shop Boys. That would really be compromising the gospel to go that far. I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? Or Boy George. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that's necessary. I think that's compromising the truth. So in the book,
remember the song of Men Without Hats? He had one hit. Eric would text us, Master of Trivia. What was the one hit of Men Without Hats?
Men Without Hats. Even trying to remember that makes me want to take my own life.
It was called The Safety Dance.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
If you want to,
ever stop it. Okay. Stop that. That's evil. Stop that. Not a fan, not a fan of the early MTV breakouts.
But you remembered their name.
No, I never did. Name. I never did. Okay, look.
You were a Duran Duran fan. You loved Duran Duran. You had posters on your bedroom walls. You told me about it.
In the morning when I wake up before I work on my coiffure, I always look like that guy from Flock of Seagulls. Do you remember that guy?
The hair sticking up on one side.
I don't know. It just was wrong. Okay. It just gets crazy. Billy Graham, whom you write about, obviously, in the book called Billy Graham, The Man I Knew, he met and knew everyone. He ministered to the Queen of England. He ministered to people we can't even imagine. He knew Churchill.
Yeah. It's amazing. And it was hard to get him to talk about these things, frankly, because I understood that when I shook hands with Billy Graham, I was shaking hands with Mr. History. He knew Golda Meir. He knew, as you mentioned, the Queen, Winston Churchill. He knew all the popular movie stars of the day, Bob Hope and John Wayne and Jack Benny, etc. But then he had effectively, for the most part, a working relationship with every American president from Truman, arguably, all the way to Trump. Though Trump wasn't in office, Trump came to Billy's 95th birthday party and sat at his table. I was at that party, and Trump was then a businessman. So he knew Donald Trump. Barack Obama came to visit him. But all these presidents on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat, called on Billy. He really was a pastor to them. But, you know, I think one of his great qualities is he would not always disclose details because he respected their privacy and didn't want to exploit it. And that probably goes back to what happened when he met his first president, President Truman. Billy was sort of blown up at that point, becoming very well known. He requested a meeting with the president. He was denied a few times. Finally, they let him come for a short meeting. He walked into the president's office. He and his team were very young men. They had these double-breasted suits with hand-painted ties, white buck shoes. And Billy puts his hand on the president's shoulder, prays for him. And he found out later he wasn't supposed to touch the president. And Truman didn't like Billy all that much because afterwards he went on the front lawn of the White House and the press came to him and asked him, what did the president say to you? And he told them. And then they said, would you get down and pray? And so Billy and two of his team members that were in the Oval Office got down on one knee praying. They took this picture. Truman did not like it at all. Billy later apologized to Truman. Truman said it was no problem. Someone should have briefed you. But he learned to be more discreet when he met with these important people and to keep their conversations he had with them confidential, but he always was seeking to minister to them and point them to Christ.
I just wonder what it was about Truman. Maybe the fact that Billy wore a hand-painted tie and Truman had been a haberdasher. Sometimes haberdashers, they don't take kindly to those sartorial innovations. And I know in the 50s, the hand-painted ties were big in the South. I'm just, you know, speculating, brother. Well, look,
interesting detail there.
Yeah, not that interesting, but not many people know that Truman was a haberdasher, just like Jimmy Carter was a peanut farmer and Trump was a philanderer. People don't know those things and they need to know that. Now, when you say that Trump visited Billy Graham on his 95th birthday, so that means obviously Billy Graham must have been like OK with adultery, right?
No, he, you know,
no. But wait a minute. But he broke bread with Trump. Doesn't that imply that he accepts everything about Trump's past as a good thing?
Well, I listened. So many of our presidents, he had a close relationship with President Johnson, even President Kennedy.
It's so preposterous because people criticize Trump. I mean, of course, I'm joking, but can you imagine that Kennedy brought prostitutes into the White House often? No one ever mentions anything about that.
As president, he did this,
As president.
Of course, and he had a very close relationship with President Clinton as well. So I think Billy always tried to build bridges to people and to point them to Jesus. And he would, no matter who they were or what their lifestyle was or what they had been engaged in, he would try to help them. And of course, what is in evangelism, you know, we have to enter people's world. How can we influence people if we don't talk to people? And I mean, if you want to take guilt by association, apply it to Billy. And he was attacked because he interfaced with all kinds of people. He would have liberal clergymen sit on his platform. He would have Catholic priests on his platform. People would criticize him. But the key is, what did he say? Because if you're meeting with these people and you engage them in conversations about Christ and about the Word of God, that's the whole point of evangelism. And to engage them, you must talk to them and listen to them.
Well, this is why, I mean, obviously my audience knows I was joking, but that's the problem today is that it's very selective judging, right?
Well, that's
so,
right.
So people apply a different standard to people who have associated with Trump as though that implies that, that you approve of his past. I'll bet he doesn't himself approve of his past, you know. So there's very little grace today. And the reason Billy Graham is such an icon is because he was a symbol, a living symbol of that kind of grace. I mean, to be somebody willing to meet with Trump and with Barack Obama and with everybody, he didn't play that game. And that's a it's just sad to me that we've gotten so divided. I hope we can get back there, Greg, because you and I know that you can never share the good news of Jesus unless you live that way, unless it's not about judging people, but about sharing the love of the Lord. When you wrote this book, I assume because you and the Irwin brothers have made these other films, you're planning to make a documentary about this book as well?
Not at this moment, but let me just kind of go back to what you said earlier, because it's an interesting point. I read a Barna poll that was done. It said that 95% of nonbelievers would like to have a conversation with a believer if they could speak to them without being judged. And I found that interesting because, you know, when you look at Jesus with the woman at the well, he was very patient with her. And there was a lot of give and take, a lot of exchange there. And then ultimately he, you know, called her out for her sin. But then he gave her the truth, the answer, and she believed in him. So I think that it's an important thing to be a good listener when you're sharing your faith. The best form of evangelism is not a monologue. It's a dialogue where you listen and then respond. But no, we're not at this moment. This is not being made into a documentary film. That could happen very easily. But, you know, there's still we're hopefully going to start filming something we've talked about before, Jesus Revolution, this year.
Oh, I forgot about that. My gosh. Well, if you do film the Billy Graham thing, I want to play George Beverly Shea. I'm saying that now.
Okay.
So you can pray about it. Is that okay?
I really believe
God created me to play the role of George Beverly Shea, and I will freak you out. People will just...
You can be Charles Templeton, too. There's that role.
Thank you. Well, look, I love the idea that you're doing all these things. We're going to go to a break. Folks, I'm talking to my friend, Pastor Greg Laurie. The book is Billy Graham, The Man I Knew. Don't forget, folks, go to Nutramedics.com, please, and use the code ERIC for 20% off. We'll be right back. Wow.
Hey.
Was that Muggsy reading Over the Top or what, man?
Oh, man, you were chewing the carpet there.
I left it all on the field, Alvin. I got nothing left to give.
Oh, man.
I got nothing left to give, and we got a whole couple of segments that we got to fill, and I'm just emotionally
drained,
man.
Yeah, I can see
you know what? Now would be a good time to do an Ask Metaxas segment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people write in and they have questions, and Ask Metaxas, or technically should be Axe Metaxas, is where you read the questions and I try to answer them. Let's try it.
Yeah. And we're going to combine it a little later on with a listener writes.
Because if we have time.
Two powerful segments
here. Very powerful. They shouldn't be combined. They're so powerful.
Yeah, so hang on to your hats.
Let's see what we got.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we go. The first Ask Metaxas question comes in to us from Brad somewhere in America or the world or the universe somewhere. Brad. We are huge fans.
And this is Brad writing. Go ahead.
Yeah, we are huge fans, written in all caps. Wow. We are visiting Greece in September. Do you have any recommended history books or biblical readings before we go?
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah?
No.
Okay. That's our next question.
Let's move on.
Okay. Okay, Ben. Right. Okay, well, you are moving on. Dear Mr. Metaxas, he calls you Mr. I am writing to you to ask a question. He didn't have to write that, but he did. When will your sequel to Seven Women be released?
Okay, most people know I wrote a book called Seven Men.
Yes.
Then I wrote a book called Seven Women. Then I was going to write a book called Seven Drag Icons.
Yes.
Cher, Liza Minnelli, Joan Crawford, Betty Davis. But Thomas Nelson didn't want to publish it. They thought it was too controversial. So I thought, okay,
Tommy,
why don't I just do a sequel to Seven Men? I'll call it Seven More Men.
Okay.
So I did. And then I said, of course, I'm going to do seven more women. Mm-hmm. But Thomas Nelson and Zondervan, I think they got cold feet because sequels, they say, don't sell as well.
Oh.
So I don't know if I'm going to get to do. I mean, look, I know I'm going to write the book. In fact, it's more than half written. But when we publish Seven More Women is an open question. Seven More Men came out last year during COVID, so it probably didn't sell as well even as we thought. That's the problem with COVID. So try to launch a book not during a global pandemic. That's right. Just a tip of advice from a longtime writer.
Yeah.
And
that was the only problem with COVID.
Yeah, that was the only problem is that my book didn't do as well as expected.
No.
But actually, people read Seven Men and Seven Women, and they want more. And Seven More Men is that book. Seven More Women, mm-hmm. We will publish it. We just need to find the right publisher.
Yes.
Or you know what? I would publish it myself because so many people keep asking me about it that I'm getting sick of it. I'm thinking, I just want to go, here it is. And I can't do that until I finish writing it and get it published.
Right.
So thanks for asking.
Yes.
And, write an email to your favorite publisher and ask them why they're not publishing it.
That's
because
right.
Because honestly, I can't wait to get it out there. People, I'm not kidding, all around the country, they love these books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all
yeah.
I'll say.
Great. Now, this next question is terrific because yesterday or the day before, we had Kevin McCullough on. And you call him Votestradamus. Chris Himes came up with that great name, but you use it all the time. This listener named Rick says, I like listening to your program. However, I wonder why you disgrace Kevin McCullough by calling him Nostradamus. Nostradamus. It's actually Votestradamus. But Nostradamus was a false prophet who had a few wild guesses cloaked in vague terminology that could be interpreted as accurate prophecies by an interpreter biased in his favor. Just wondering.
Well, Rick brings up a very, very important issue. Unfortunately, this is not that important issue.
No.
This is a kind of a silly thing. He says, why would I disgrace Kevin by calling him Nostradamus? First of all, I don't call him Nostradamus. I call him Votestradamus.
Right.
And really what I'm doing is making fun of Nostradamus. So if you think that I am lauding Votestradamus, then you're not really catching it, Rick. I want to say, like, I'm kind of making fun of Nostradamus. Nostradamus was a 15th century French versifier who wrote these, these quatrains. And at one point, he says something about Hister or something. It's almost like Hitler. A lot of his stuff could be seen as potentially true. But listen,
yeah,
we need to understand that prophesying the future, God can do that, but the dark side can do that too. So if you just want information, you don't care where it comes from, hey, you know, the devil and his minions are happy to provide you with secret knowledge as long as you give them your eternal soul. That's all they ask.
Yeah,
so when you're dealing with somebody like Nostradamus, I would never suggest that I think much of him. In fact, what I would do is make fun of him by calling Kevin McCullough Votestradamus. So I am, in fact, not praising Nostradamus as much as I am kind of teasing anybody who thinks that he's worth taking seriously. And Kevin McCullough, by the way, far from being disgraced by that appellation, he is honored by it. Okay?
Yeah.
More honored than anything in his life. Beyond his marriage, his children, being called Votestradamus is his number one thing.
Now, see, I saw a different side of him because when he was in the green room after this last interview, which people can watch online at Rumble, he was weeping. I mean, this is a grown man, actually.
Because he is so honored by this honorific.
Tears
and that's what it is.
Tears of
that
honor.
He was weeping. He was like, Eric and Chris, thank you, thank you. This means more to me than anything. And I had to tell him, no, God and your family should be more important. But it took him a while for him to get that.
Yeah, so I think he has it actually tattooed right across his chest now.
Votestradamus.
When we come back, because it looks like we're going to a break here.
Yeah. Doggone it, we're out of time. We're going to go to a break. Folks, I'm talking to my friend, Pastor Greg Laurie. The book is Billy Graham, The Man I Knew. We'll be right back.
Your own way.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to my friend, pastor, and evangelist, Greg Laurie. Greg Laurie, you said to me before we came on the air that Billy Graham was very, very ahead of his time with race relations. Talk about that, because a lot of people don't know the history. I mean, I've tried to write in a couple of my books, William Wilberforce, An Amazing Grace, and others, that when you really believe what the Bible says, you cannot be racist. But a lot of people didn't live that out. But Billy Graham did at a time when it was very, very divisive and difficult in the country. So talk about that.
Yeah, well, he was a son of the South. He was from North Carolina, raised in Charlotte. And, of course, we know that there was a lot of racial division in all of the nation, but especially there. But as Billy began his crusades, people wanted to hold segregated meetings, not letting black people into the meetings or the white people were. Billy said, I will not speak to in a segregated meeting. I want integration in our meetings. And they refused. And he literally came down and took down the little ropes and things that were dividing the crowds. And he got some people upset with him. But he also, when he was really at the peak of his popularity, had Martin Luther King do an opening prayer at the Madison Square Garden. That was highly controversial because King was not, you know, he was not popular with a lot of people in the South. And for Billy to allow King to have that role was significant. I watched a documentary on PBS the other day about Billy Graham. It was just recently done. They got so many things wrong historically, factually. And one of the things they pointed out was sort of like Billy missed his opportunity during the civil rights movement. And that is so untrue, because even he and Dr. King agreed that the best way that he could help is by using his influence in his crusades. As Dr. King was out on the streets and they were doing their peaceful protests and marches and Rosa Parks and so many others, Billy was very supportive of this, but they felt they were more effective in their spheres of influence. And in fact, Billy was a real innovator at that time. And I thought that documentary was not accurate, as they reported and spent a lot of time reporting that part of his life.
And that's a PBS. Was this American Masters? What was it? We don't know.
I think that's exactly what it was. Yes.
I mean, that's upsetting. It's not too surprising, but it is upsetting. Look, the secular media often is so tone deaf to the point of great ignorance and pushing falsehoods. We know, to mention your second book on Johnny Cash, you know, the wonderful film Walk the Line, it was wonderful, except it completely censored the central part of Johnny Cash's life, which was his faith in Jesus, which was what got him off of drugs and alcohol. I mean, that's at the heart of everything. It's at the heart of it's the turning point of his whole life. They ignored it. And you're telling me now that PBS has done something similar. And look, I don't think that most of the people who do these kinds of things, they're not trying to be malicious, but they bought into a narrative, and sometimes they're pushing that narrative. But shame on PBS for getting that wrong, because as you're saying, they didn't just get it wrong. They got it utterly backwards. He was a forerunner racial progressivism, to use a strange term.
That's right. And Dr. King spoke very highly of Billy Graham, and publicly, and thanked him for his efforts. And privately, they were friends and had a lot of dialogue together. So that was an area where Billy was a really ahead of his time. Another area where I think he was really an innovator was the media. I mean, we're used to hearing Christians on radio now. Billy went on the radio with this program, The Hour of Decision, long before you heard any kind of religious programming on the radio. He was the first on television. And he even had his own movie studio in Hollywood called Worldwide Pictures. And they were making feature films they were releasing in the theaters. He was very innovative and ahead of his time with satellite technology, taking his live events and beaming them around the world. And so Billy was always an early adopter of all technologies to leverage for the gospel.
Greg, you were talking earlier on the break about, you yourself have met a lot of politicians, and as a man of God, as an evangelist, you try to be open to all sides. I know recently you were with Pompeo and Pence. Do you Can you talk about that, or are you going to get in trouble the way Billy Graham did with Truman?
No. I met with them both, and you know, they're both believers. They have strong faith in Christ. I actually asked former Secretary of State Pompeo, you know, how do you deal with the stress of the kind of things that you are exposed to? And he said, you know, he says, I don't know how anybody could do this without a relationship with God. Eric, Secretary Pompeo told me about when he went and visited Kim Jong-un. What an incredible story. He flew out there. He lands at the airport. He says it was completely deserted, a beautiful state-of-the-art airport, completely deserted. He comes down off of his plane with the security detail, and the North Koreans say, you can't bring your security detail here. And he thought about it for a moment, and he thought, well, what would it do at best? Buy me, what, 10 minutes? And so he had them all have to leave their weapons, and he went in and met with Kim Jong-un. They would sit down. He said every 15 minutes, Kim Jong-un had to take a smoke break and then came back in. He was very nervous, but, you know,
he's very chubby, and he smokes. Imagine if he quit smoking, he'd blow up. He'd be bigger than a house, and that's not good for anybody. So, honestly, I got a joke when things make me nervous. The very idea of meeting with a true dictator, tyrant, monster, who's a human being, but to do it in the interest of international relations, that's an amazing burden that Pompeo would have had that opportunity. It's just amazing. Obviously, Trump met with Kim Jong-un as well, but wow.
Yeah. But he went over there on Easter, and they had to do everything under the radar and keep it secret. And just amazing stories. He's just a wonderful guy, and I was able to pray for him. And, you know, I always feel like my role when being with him is not, I'm not a political pundit. I'm not there to give them political advice, not that they'd even want it from me if I offered it. But I'm there to be pastoral. I'm there to pray for them. I'm there to try to encourage them in any way that I can. And then I met with former Vice President Pence, and we had a wonderful discussion. One thing that we talked about quite a bit was the need of a spiritual awakening in America. And boy, that really resonated with him. And I talked to him a little bit about a film we're working on called Jesus Revolution that will be a feature film. And, you know, and we had prayer again. And it was just, to me, a real privilege to just do whatever I can to encourage these guys and women as well.
Forgive me, we're gonna go to break. A few more minutes left with Greg Laurie. Don't go away. Folks, I continue my conversation with pastor, evangelist, author Greg Laurie. Greg, I've got a very important question to ask you. I want to save it for last. Are you familiar with Nutramedics.com?
I am not. Tell me about it.
You're not?
No.
What? I thought you were some kind of friend. Wow. I guess I got to rethink what friendship means. Albin, are you listening to this? Can we even air this segment? I'm just like messed up. All right, look. I'm all about grace, Greg, so I'm just going to let it go. And I'm going to tell you as patiently as I can, but I cannot believe you don't know Nutramedics.com. Nutramedics.com is an organization by godly people who know what friendship is, incidentally.
Oh, good.
And they know about you, and you need to know about them. Nutramedics.com, actually, in all seriousness, they are run. It's an amazing company. They sell supplements. I mean, anybody who takes vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, magnesium, whatever it is, I say they should go to Nutramedics.com and use the code Eric for 20% off, because Nutramedics.com gives 50% of their profits to missions, usually third world missions. So now you know what it is, and we can be friends again.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about Billy Graham. Actually, there's so much I want to talk to you about. It's always dizzying talking to you. You and I have had behind the scenes a lot of laughs hanging out with, you know, Pastor Jack Graham and stuff. And to see you guys, you know, behind the scenes, it's good to know that people who are so serious about God are so much fun to hang out with. And I just interviewed Jack Graham in Dallas recently, and he was talking about his most recent book where he talks about his depression. And I thought, what a brave thing for him to do that. Because when you know him, as we do, he just doesn't seem like the kind of person who could experience that. So that was just so brave. But your friendship is important to me, which is why I can joke with you. But if people want to get a copy of this book, do they go to your ministry website, or how can people find you if they want to find Greg Laurie?
Yeah, well, our ministry website is harvest.org, and you can order a copy from us, but you can also order it on Amazon. They have an excellent audio version. It was read perfectly by a professional reader.
Was it somebody imitating you?
Nope, just a guy reading as they read the books, you know?
I want your voice. Do you know, I got to know Pastor Greg Denham, who's in Southern California.
Yes.
And when he started talking, he told me that, you know, what you meant to him, and you were like a mentor and this and that. And he sounds kind of like you.
He does.
But then he did an impression of you. Have you heard him do that?
I have, yes. It's
pretty
good.
It was better than, I could not believe how good it was. It was pronounced Metaxas the way you pronounce Metaxas.
How do I pronounce it?
Well, you don't mispronounce it, but just the way you say it, I thought.
Metaxas.
I need to have, if you.
Am I saying it wrong?
No, you're not saying it wrong. Just the way. It's just the way you talk. But it was so funny. So they should have gotten Greg Denham to read your book, you know, because they like when the author reads it and you're busy. But Greg Denham, he could imitate you. All right, forget it. Forget it.
Yes.
We're not going to run this. It's just too chaotic. No, Greg, seriously, we have, you know, 40 seconds left. But what is life like pastoring a church in California now? COVID is sort of over. What's it been like?
It's been challenging, but people are coming back. We have most of our people back in person. But in the interim, we were able to expand online, and we went from an online viewing audience on a given Sunday of 10,000 to like 300,000.
What?
So we have a whole new, it's true. We have a whole new online congregation I didn't have before. So that was kind of one of the pluses that came despite the devastating effects of these lockdowns that were connected
Isn't that interesting?
COVID.
Well,
yeah.
That's Romans 8:28. That's good news. That's good news. Well, my friend, just cheers me up to see you. Thanks for coming on. Congratulations on the book, Billy Graham.
Thank you.
The Man I Knew.
Thank you for having me.